Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided for the use of the blind and print impaired. Materials or items read on AIRS LA are the copyright property of the original authors and publishers. No unauthorized use or duplication is permitted. Today's articles are from the December 2025 edition. A Century of Celebration by Rebecca Angel Bear. For many locals, a December trip to the Peabody, Memphis, is as essential as decorating the tree. It's the morning after Thanksgiving, and Conrad Spitzbart is trying to fit a gingerbread house into an elevator at the Peabody Hotel. It is no ordinary piece of confectionery. This elaborate, supersized creation marks the beginning of the holiday season at the 100-year-old building and is as anticipated by Memphinians and out-of-towners as Santa Claus himself. Executive pastry chef Spitzbart, his team, and the hotel's engineering department carry out the arduous task of transporting the massive display from the pastry shop on the second floor down to the lobby. Everything must make it on the elevator, which Spitzbart says they've gotten wrong a couple of times. Generally, it is moved in about 10 segments. It might fit upstairs and then not seem to be fitting down here all the way. But then we put a lot of icing on it to cover it up, he says with a laugh, as the crew works to join pieces together and add the finishing touches to their creation. Spectators of all ages gather to watch them work. In the past, this talented bunch has produced classic Christmas villages, complete with rotating platforms, a giant Santa Claus, and even the Grinch. The final assembly on that Friday morning is the culmination of approximately 250 hours of work. All of that begins with planning in the hot, hazy days of August. According to Spitzbart, he never stops thinking about the holidays at the Peabody, and that's not unusual. Memphis Merriment. Christmas at the South Grand Hotel is a team effort in every respect. Chef Keith Clinton of the in-house restaurant Chez Philippe calls it the Rockefeller Center of Memphis, and that's a sentiment shared by multiple generations in the Bluff City. You won't find a more festive backdrop for enjoying a cocktail, having a celebratory meal, or just sightseeing. The highlight is the lobby Christmas tree, adorned with approximately 15,000 lights and 2,000 ornaments, which rises all the way up to the rich mahogany corbels of the elaborate coffered ceiling. The normally bustling area fills with guests, sipping drinks accented by a signature rubber ducky from the bar and listening to tunes from the player piano or artist singing lively carols. Afternoon tea with Santa happens throughout the month, complete with sweets like cranberry scones and eggnog cheesecake. The best part is a visit from the big man himself. Christmas morning brunch is an opulent affair served in the grand ballroom, featuring hot and cold food stations with dishes ranging from brined turkey to barbecue ribs to waffles and bite-sized pies. Reservations for this special meal are open to the public, not just to hotel guests. Clinton, a native of the city, says that long before he began working at Chez Philippe, having brunch at the Peabody was his own family's tradition. Now he is in charge of the nightly tasting menus for the hotel's fine dining restaurant, which is another wonderful place to get together with loved ones. At Chez Philippe, Clinton works with the area's agricultural bounty, and his menu reflects the seasonality of ingredients, depending on the year's harvest. It's like writing a song. The farmers will give us the melody, and we just build on that, the chef explains. A Tennessee treasure. The Peabody has served as a central gathering point in the city since opening in its current location on September 1, 1925. However, it fell on hard times in the early 70s, and landed on the auction block under foreclosure. This landmark could have been lost forever had it not been for Jack Belts, who bought it in 1975. Immediately following the purchase, he and his close friend, renowned Memphis contractor Milton Angel, began a 6-year restoration to preserve the iconic building's historic elements. As demolition began, acoustic panels that had been placed all over the ceiling by a previous owner were removed when the crew was alarmed to see sunshine on the floor, according to Belt. Behind the panels was a large skylight that no one knew it was there. I would say that was the most glorious moment in the entire project, he recalls. The skylights were brought back to life and remain a focal point in the lobby to this day. They were restored to pristine condition and made available for the joy of generations. I hope and pray for centuries to come, also, Belt says. Letting the joy in. It's only proper that for Santa's annual appearance, he gets an assist from the Peabody Ducks. St. Nick's arrival comes just on the heels of the afternoon duck march. Twice a day, 7 days a week, the famous fowls waddle single file through the lobby. Every morning, they are led by the official duck master from their penthouse apartment on the roof, down the elevator, to the Italian travertine fountain in the middle of the building. They swim there all day before returning upstairs each evening, a practice that dates back to 1940. Both the duck master and his 5 feathered friends serve as ambassadors for the hotel and the city itself. Current duck master Kenan Walker says that on this spectacular day, the duck march is the opening act for Santa. It's teamwork. I kind of throw the baton up to him. Walker views the duck master role as his true calling and never takes an interaction with a guest for granted. The thing that I've realized is 9 times out of 10, people are going through something, and there is something charming about this that makes them forget what they might be going through for just a little while. And open up, just kind of let the joy in, and that never gets old to me, he says. The sentiment is only amplified around the holidays. Walker recognizes that for a lot of families, a visit to the Peabody to see the ducks is their special tradition. So many people come here year after year. I've seen kids grow up. I end up in so many Christmas cards, and to be a part of what they do to bring joy into the house. It's amazing, he says. Remembering Gumbo Claus, honoring the legacy of a true New Orleans original by Jessica B. Harris. It's been almost a year since my friend Pablo Johnson became an ancestor. My grief at his passing is lessening slightly, but with the return of cooler weather and the year-end holidays, the loss barrels back in full force. He adored Christmas, almost as much as he did his grandmother's table, and he truly cherished that piece. The scarred and pitted thing became the focus of his art. The table needs feeding, Pablo would say. He used it to create a community that, after his death, revealed itself to be so far-ranging that obituaries for him ran in the New York Times, Imbibe Magazine, the Los Angeles Times, the Southern Living website, and to everyone's surprise, The Economist. A master photographer, he earned fame for documenting the African-American parades and second lines that are such a vital part of New Orleans. He loved the people who maintained this heartbeat of the city's culture, and they loved him. Pablo would invite a small group of friends, plus their friends, 10 was the magic number, to join him around his old, stained wooden table each Monday for a home-cooked red bean supper, accompanied by his rich skillet-made cornbread. An invitation to this standing meal became one of the city's most coveted. The guest list was stellar and included everyone from the second line members and Mardi Gras Indians he photographed, that he photographed with affection and brilliance to award-winning chefs, to journalists, and visiting dignitaries. There were two rules: no cell phones allowed, and bring what you're drinking. The holiday season, he'd go into full-tilt boogie mode. After Thanksgiving, he'd source turkey carcasses from friends and store them in a freezer on the porch of his shotgun house. Then, as Christmas was coming, he'd go into his kitchen, and with transformation as miraculous as that of Clark Kent morphing into Superman, emerge as Gumbo Claus. As this alter ego, he would make what someone once called industrial quantities of the classic Louisiana dish, which he would deliver to loved ones. And then, to cap off the season, he would serve the gumbo at an open house, along with melt-in-your-mouth smothered cabbage, to honor the African-American dictum, to eat something green for folding money at the start of the new year. It was standing room only with folks from uptown, downtown, and out of town. Among the crowds were some greeting old friends as others were making new ones, all while savoring gumbo, cabbage, and cornbread. This New Year's Day, Gumbo Claus will be serving his meal to the ancestors while I'll be away from home. But when I return, I'll cook and savor some of Pablo's cabbage, pour out some rum on the ground for his memory, and then pray for folding money in 2026. Smothered cabbage. Active 30 minutes, total 1 hour 15 minutes, serves 6 to 8. 3 tablespoons vegetable oil or olive oil, 1/2 pound baked ham chopped, about 3 cups, or smoked sausage sliced 1/8 inch thick, 2 yellow onions chopped, about 3 cups, 1 28-ounce can whole peeled tomatoes in puree, undrained and crushed, 3/4 cup amber ale, such as Fair Hope Brewing Company, 1/2 cup drained, jarred olive salad, or pitted green olives finely chopped, 1 teaspoon dried basil, 1 2-3 pound head green cabbage, coarsely chopped, about 8 cups, 1 teaspoon kosher salt, 1 teaspoon black pepper, 1 teaspoon hot sauce, such as the original Louisiana hot sauce. Step 1. Heat the oil in a large Dutch oven over medium until shimmering, about 1 minute. Add the ham and cook, stirring occasionally until browned and crisp, about 5 minutes. Add the onions and cook, stirring occasionally, until the onions are slightly browned, about 6 minutes. Stir in the tomatoes, ale, olive salad, and basil. Increase the heat to medium-high and bring it to a simmer. Step 2. Add the cabbage in 3 batches. Cook, stirring often, until the leaves are slightly wilted and coated in a mixture after each addition. Reduce the heat to medium-low and simmer covered and undisturbed until the cabbage is tender, about 45 minutes. Stir in the salt, pepper, and hot sauce.
We have come to the end of our program. I'm Joyce Davis, and I will be back soon.